Blog Talk Radio.
The Black Panther Party for Self-Defense is organized now throughout the nation. We are recognized internationally, and we advocate that all black people in America are taught what politics is all about and what our history is all about so that we can have self-identity and we can know where our strength is, we will know our enemies, and we'll know our friends.
Report back here, the last Sunday's paper, that we were anti-white, that we hold no bones, this is a quote, hold no bones about being anti-white. This is a bold-faced lie. We don't hate nobody because of their color. We hate oppression. We hate murder of black people in our communities. We hate the gross unemployment that exists in our communities. We hate black men being taken off into the military service to be fighting for our greatest decade in American prominence, us freedom. In the Civil War, 186,000 black men fought in the military service, and we were promised freedom, and we didn't get it. In World War II, 350,000 black men fought, and we were promised freedom, and we didn't get it. In World War II, 850,000 black men fought, and we were promised freedom, and we didn't get it. In the Korean conflict, the so-called police action, a war, we fought there, and we didn't get it. Now here we go with the damn Vietnam War, and we still ain't getting nothing but racist police brutality, etc. We are against oppression.
We want housing, we want clothing, we want education, we want justice, and we want peace.
and you are not coming to the people's defense.
That's right, right.
So if you want us to do better, then damn it, you do better. Do what you say. This country is supposed to be about the land of the free for all. It has not been free for black people, and we are tired.
One question, protect and serve who? To me it seems that they just quit to observe you, and then they have the nerve to come and disturb you, enforce a curfew, they physically hurt you. I heard the patience was a virtue, but how long we gonna disregard the fact is we all talk and practice this new age, trying to rebuke rage, or y'all gonna need some skin more tougher than Luke Cage. Trayvon, Terrence, they gone, perished, on up to George Floyd. See what your laws avoid, and now we gotta find some sort of order before the slaughter gets brought up with mortar reporter, those who do the unthought. This we gotta put a mandate on. You see my bullet wounds and try to put a band-aid on. As soon as one of us take a stand, they wrong, because you wanna keep us on your plantation. Come on.
Get up.
Must be a better way.
Get up. Get up.
I see the every day.
Get up.
We can't be left.
It's where they come for ya.
The sheets are on,
and I don't see no comforter. Now you may prepare for 2K, but they prepare for 3Ks. Order comes here later. I see the ones that fight for solidarity, and still in all I see a lot of y'all ain't hearing me. You know what? The fact is y'all kinda forgot to struggle like activists all timers. Learn to walk the walk on the path when it's narrow. Can't be crabs in the barrel, this is grabbing the apparel. We should demand order to correct the manslaughter for residents of Flint drinking tan water. And Puerto Rico, what ain't here for your people?
No.
Let's stay strong and try to keep a hand in it. Transcend it until the next pandemic. Let's go.
Ended. You only got suspended. Huh. They all say I'm hating and only race baits. But we ain't gonna trust us until we get justice. Yeah. In the fight for peace, we gonna rise like heat. Come on. Hey, cause in the darkest hour, we still fight the power. Yo, you can't stop the cavalry from Malcolm to Mallory. We're gonna keep it 100. We ain't trying to run from it. Yo, think we're gonna stay distracted. Y'all got it backwards.
We are oppressed. We are exploited. We are downtrodden. We are denied not only civil rights, but even human rights. So the only way we're going to get some of this oppression and exploitation away from us or aside from us is come together against the common enemy.
consciousness. Without human consciousness, there is no world. It is the presence of human consciousness that brings meaning into the world. Without human beings in this world, conscious human beings in this world, in effect, there would not be a world. We bring the world into being through our consciousness. And through our consciousness, we create the world we live in. Out of the totality of reality, our consciousness cuts out a world that fits itself. In other words, the kind of world you exist in reflects the kind of consciousness that you have. And notice, if you change your consciousness or change your values and orientation, you enter into a different world. You interact with different people. People often that you didn't even know existed in the world. Social situations that you might not have even recognized until you entered into a new level of consciousness. You see people, say, for instance, who become addicted, say, to crack or something, and now enter into a whole world and enter into a whole social system that before they became addicted, they hardly noticed. They didn't know what it was all about. And they picked up new friends and new relations, whole new ways of acting, whole new purposes in life. They lost old friends, broke with old families, all kinds of things. In other words, the consciousness, that addictive consciousness, brought into the world a new foreground and put other things into the background. Therefore, man's consciousness is a creative act. And the kind of consciousness you have will determine the kind of world you create. And consequently, when you look at the world that we live in, African people, we must recognize to a great extent it is a world of our own creation. It is a world that has been generated by the type of consciousness we've been permitted to be instilled in us as a people.
RBGs. Know what I mean? It's war. Know what I mean? Yo, stick. I mean, you should be real on war. The block. Pigs be out there, occupied army. RBGs, it's a takeover, not a makeover. Yeah. The cops stop you just because you black, that's war. Run you through the system for your prince, that's war. When they call my hood a drug zone, that's war. Slumlord charging you for rent, that's war. Why they so rich and we poor, that's war. If you young and black, you sell crack, that's war. The White House is the rock house, that's war. George Bush coming out his mouth, that's war. Chilling on the corner with your gang, that's war. Popo do the same damn thing, that's war. When they murdered Amadou Diallo, that's war. Marching in the streets is a strategy of war. Knowing self-defense is a strategy of war. Soldiers try to link with other soldiers in the war. Revolutionaries got to know the art of war. War, what about hip-hop? Use that. Matter of fact, fuck a rap battle. What about a gap battle? Let's take it to the beast and see which cat tattle. Is it Kids versus Beans or P versus Hove? What about y'all real niggas against the 5-0? This is M1, DPs, don't you forget. Cause you could talk, 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 but that don't mean shit. I ain't gotta pop your top to see where your brains went. This rap shit is way bigger than entertainment. It's the people versus the pigs when it all go down. It's not pop versus big, it's who's getting the power. And power ain't money, dog, it's self-determination. Like taking hot and making it the real people station, that's war. Know what I mean? Yeah. Rap war, whatever war. You live a fast life, more or less, more so, it's still war. Dead prayers, the people radio. Yeah. Get down, get down, get down. RBGZ, biatch.
You are now listening to WR.
Hey, 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 hey.
like Marcus. Garvey, I'm an artist, respect to the goddess. Some say I'm too modest because I'm the hardest. On this path to progress, there's been carnage. Regardless, this is a harvest for the world to harness. Elders dream, creators promise. Being free is like paying homage. I've been on that beat, Black Dalai Lama. My college was between Stony and Cottage. The knowledge, I got it because niggas was violent. Knew I had to pull it, the bullet or the ballot. It's like the parable of the story of the talents. When my people took it paper with no margin. Turning ghettos to gardens, like Ron Finley. Through stages of life, the world's my Wembley. I MC from the point of entry of peace. Some find it, don't do the paper routing. And some find they peace through praise and shouting. And some find they peace through pulling the shade like Malcolm. I found my peace making these albums. Peace. Ground zero for xenophobia. They love to trope me, a myth, Kobe. They even wrote me out of all accounts, other than show them a small amount. Till I called them out, I'm what the story is all about. My arrival wasn't willingly, nah, but that's chillingly the truth. Now I'm fear for shots from cops killing me. They on a hunt for the plug, and we the auxiliary. The black power and love, I'm all the above. But find peace in the culture, I'm responsible to saving every piece of the puzzle, every article, the page. I'm at peace in the struggle, I'm awake and not afraid. While I'm channeling my energy from particle to wave at peace. Like Mandela seated on Robben Island. Wise like a prophet arriving from the highlands. Look, I'm not here for any kind of problem. Keep me out of your gossip column. Thank you, I'm calm and tranquil. At the time and place you I shine. Word to God, I'm divine and graceful. The grind could break you. If you concentrate, you can find your faith. With a higher conscience takes you back.
Humperdinck on the rare earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
To In Defense of the People weekly Tuesday night broadcast at 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, People's Political Party National Chairman Nat Turner, and co-host, myself, Brother Motherland, National Minister of Defense, and our engineer on the ones and twos, Sister Amina, the National Minister of Communication, calling each and every Tuesday night, same black place, same black time, at 845-277-9266. Press 1 to participate. Tonight's topic, Juneteenth, on the road to becoming free. And we're going to open up our lines for our national host, People's Political Party Chair, Matt Turner, Black Power Comrade. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
Black Power Comrades. I can hear y'all loud and clear.
Right on. Yeah, man. Another show, man. We at it again. And rightfully so. We supposed to have the right to free speech under this so-called Constitution, being citizens of this so-called great country. You know, so tonight we're going to express our right to free speech. Juneteenth, which is a couple of days upon us, you know what I'm saying? And so we chose this show for this topic, and, Juneteenth, the beginning of the road to liberation. And we see that as the correct understanding of it. Not so much as to oppose other brothers and sisters who celebrate what is now a national holiday. You know, but we in the People's Political Party believe in what the Black Panther Party had come to realize and understand about politicizing the people, politically educating so-called black people in this part of the world, in this country, for the sole purposes of heightening their awareness, and in turn, heightening their awareness heightens their response to the infractions that are carried out against us, that are imposed upon us, through, you know, legislation, stroke of a pen, police terrorism, which has created a attitude even in the category of our own adjective and labeling of the police, as the Black Panther Party understood the police to be a pig. Part and parcel of the wanton savagery that's been carried out against people of African descent, the modern-day descendants of the Africans who were brought here and forced into slavery, which laid the foundation to the capitalist infrastructure that we now know today. America professing to be the most technologically advanced country in the world, possessing the greatest military strength or power in the world, so much so even, projecting on to the international scene by being the so-called greatest civilization, having the greatest document ever written in the name of the Constitution. So as we stated about Juneteenth being the what we feel is the beginning of the road to liberation, of course, to start off with, what is Juneteenth, how it came to be defined, also known as Juneteenth, National Independence Day, Jubilee Day, Emancipation Day, Freedom Day, Black Independence Day, a now federal holiday, supposedly commemorating the emancipation of enslaved Africans. Also celebrated, to my understanding, so-called African-American culture. It originated in Galveston, Texas, which has been celebrated annually, believe it or not, for those of us who are so used to being conditioned to celebrate the 4th of July, as hypocritical, as contradictory as that historical moment on the part of the whites, stockholders, the stakeholders, the property class who declared themselves free from the British Crown, declaring their independence 1776, July 4th. This now federal holiday signed June 17th, 2021 by present CEO, Chief Executive Officer of the American Corporation, alias President of the United States, Joe Biden. And we make no bones about it. Those of us who understand how these maneuvers, these strategic moves on the chessboard are made by the white liberal establishment to appease the Negro bourgeoisie slash black petty bourgeoisie in exchange for securing the black vote for the white liberal establishment, who is no more, no less than an arm, a wing of the white ruling class, whether they're jackass or elephant. That is Republican, a Democrat. And so this law signed by Biden was no more, no less than a concession that was handed over to those who have been selected as black leadership in these current days and times. We've done a past show in the early beginning on, black leaders and who said they were black leaders. And it's in that area that I make this reference to. This is no personal ranting or some personal endeavor. Like Malcolm X tried to teach us, that some of us had paid attention to study history and to understand our struggle from a historical analysis and to be critical thinkers, which had set him apart from the so-called black leaders, whatever their ideological preference was. So this announcement of the June 19th was carried out as General Order Number 3 by so-called Union Army General Gordon Granger, proclaiming freedom for the enslaved people in Texas. 1865, Texas being the last state the Confederacy, with institutional slavery. This proclamation, Emancipation of the Slaves, supposedly signed by one Abraham Lincoln in 1863. And so in Galveston, this had become the hallmark of the so-called remaining resistance on the part of the state of Texas, and therefore 1865. So this is the historical evolution of what is now known as Juneteenth. And this number, 19, just quickly, has some other significances to it, which we'll, at some point in time, may get into in another show, another topic, So the enforcement of the proclamation was basically predicated on Union troops, supposedly Texas being the most remote of the so-called former Confederacy, had been an expansion of slavery and had a low presence of Union troops as the Civil War ended. And so this is how Texas had become so pivotal in this Juneteenth celebration. However, with the so-called emancipation, there are those who build the impression that black people were free, which is a bit of romanticism. And we understand that as in the concrete terms of freedom, from the simple fact that slaves, so-called slaves, had been freed physically from their chains. So this is why we are very precise or on purpose, feel we're politically correct in referring to the emancipation as the physical slavery. The beginning of the struggle. Other than that, slavery had continued to perpetuate itself in several guises, similar to a chameleon. You know, where the chameleon feels threatened, it morphs into something to protect itself, whatever it's up against. So if a chameleon is on a tree and is threatened by a much more bigger animal or reptile or what have you, or creature, the chameleon morphs itself to the same color of the tree to camouflage itself. So this is what slavery had become in the late 1860s, post-physical slavery, which takes us on into so-called Reconstruction. And Reconstruction was no more nor less than exactly what the term meant. A reconstructing of the status quo's position as it related to the slaves. And there are a number of things that had arisen as a result of that. And as a matter of fact, there are those of us over the years who had come to take a careful look at the term Reconstruction in terms of the spelling. And we were aware enough that to spell the word Reconstruction in all small letters, except for the three letters that spelled the C-O-N. And so therefore, we highlighted in capital letters the word con. We all understand, well, in the sense in general, what a con is, to con someone, to con a group of people or a group of individuals or even a group of nation or even a nation as a group. And so that's how we saw Reconstruction, the struggle beginning. One thing that was used as a strategy in particular was the sharecropping. Sharecropping was basically, as the word says, sharecropping. The farmer trade, the black farmers or those who would rent out equipment to farm their land and would have to pay a debt. And so they would have to bequeath a portion of their proceeds to the proprietors, the ones who controlled the means of production. And so this was an extension of keeping the slave in the subservient position. Juneteenth is no liberation in the sense of the system. Anyone who declares Juneteenth as Liberation Day is obviously misguided, and it's okay. It's okay. Most of us didn't hit the ground running, and we had to learn just like other individuals. I'm quite sure Ford didn't hit the ground running with an automobile and some rubber, and it came flying out of the gate. He himself had to go through trial and error to perfect his craft in the automobile industry, as we now know it is today. And so the same thing. And it's also due to the perception of black leadership that has been in cahoots with the state for their own selfish means and purposes. And so we clearly believe that liberation must come at the people's discretion to liberate themselves from this system as we know it, which is seldomly given in terms of expression as capitalism, again, by those who claim to lead and guide black people. So Reconstruction, sharecropping, and of course, the one crucial factor also who maintains slavery, the 13th Amendment. The prison industrial complex, as we know it today, the continual legalizing or propagation of slavery. And so therefore, with the so-called emancipation, the reformists, the reconstructors, to continue to perpetuate their system to continue to keep their lofty position, not even counting the so-called dispossessed poor whites, who we have no problem in mentioning. But one of the ways that they were able to continue their dominance, a transformative way of keeping the black collective in the slavery conditions was the prison system. On the heels of so-called emancipation, we can speak of such things as to how this proliferation of black people in the prison system began to take place. We understand as a clear fact of criminalizing a race, which is actually a book that was written by one Charles G. McIntyre. And anyone who wants to understand the evolution of this proliferation of the black prison population as we know it today, I will recommend that book, diligently researched pre-physical slavery, post-physical slavery reconstruction, Jim Crow, on into the 70s and the 80s, which at the behest of several operations on the part of the CIA, which created the present conditions that we now see today in the hood, you know, the hustle game, you know, in what is referred to as the illegal trade as opposed to the legal trade just by a swift stroke of a pen. I once been in the presence of the leaders of the group MOVE, and I heard one of the elders, Ramona Africa, and Pam Africa, spoke about this term legal, and she had said that we must be very leery and careful about the term legal, because legal is a flexible strategy, a tactic on the part of the white ruling class to protect their interests. And so she had given examples that it was legal to enslave Africans, human beings. It was legal to rape black women in particular at their own liking due to their insatiable lust, their incalculable observances or objectives to rule and dominate and control black female bodies. And so in that timeline, we see that as part of the road to liberation, the struggle that black women had faced coming out of physical slavery and on up to today. But again, the new strategy or the continual strategy to enslave the Africans once they had been lured into what we know as behind the wall, the behind enemy lines. One of the tactics that was used to so-called arrest or imprison the so-called free blacks was the institutionalization of vagrancy, loitering. Some of us may remember the old motels where they had the neon sign that lit up that said no vagrancy, or in some of the neighborhoods or communities around business establishments, in particular the corner grocery stores where it says no loitering. These are all products or extensions of the black populace that had become the time where you use expendable post-physical slavery. And so that was one of the ways that the white ruling class, so-called former slave masters, were able to re-enslave African peoples. After all, many Africans who were told that they were no longer slaves eventually would become a populace in many instances of homelessness, of nowhere to go. I remember years ago, and excuse me for the eye, but I just wanted to point out that there was this thing where, you know, some slaves, it was or historically recorded, you know, didn't have any place to go. And they become so socialized being on the plantation that some of the slaves, you know, didn't want to leave because, after all, that was the only place where they can get a meal, you know, a place where they can eat and survive. And see, many of these things are left out of the equation, you know, when you talk about emancipation. You know, our children have been so socialized into thinking that, you know, this historic moment that announced the arrival of the African or descendants or whatever of the slaves in this country. And we can draw parallels from 1865, June 19th, to 2022, June 14th, as we speak. And we can clearly see the parallels of, you know, what we are told is the so-called freedom of the slaves, see? And with the onslaught of a massive black population of blacks who had become expendable. And what I mean by that, they no longer had any work to the white ruling class industrialists who in one instance saw a value, as in when we speak of the market value. And so the black slave population post-physical slavery became a surplus population. And anybody who understands Wall Street, the economics, the trade, reduction, overproduction, overconsumption, can understand as a surplus market. And the surplus market, in terms of retail, becomes valueless. But unbeknownst to us, we're, you know, we're prided into thinking discounts or sales or what have you. It's a surplus value due to the market's overconsumption of so-called material goods or goods and services. And so this is why in some seasons, when the seasons change, this is why someone in the beginning of, let's say, spring, purchased a shirt or what have you that was valued at $150. And when spring had to come to summer, then that long sleeve shirt was devalued to $50 or $49. And of course, there was a surplus because of the lack of sales. And so if you can picture that, if you can understand that, then you can equate that to the slaves once so-called emancipation had taken full effect in 1865, June 19th. And so there became a surplus population, which therefore became valueless. And so therefore there was no no longer keep the slave fed and healthy, because the slave was a market value asset to the slave masters, to those who controlled and steered the capitalist machine upon which they had reaped massive benefits through the slave. And so this is the beginning of the road to our liberation, the struggle that the African masses in this country had began to endure based on this Juneteenth so-called final declaration of emancipation, with Texas being the, you know, virtually the last resistant Confederacy state. Now, one thing I want to point out briefly, and perhaps we can have a show in the future. The question is, was the Civil War really fought over slavery? The average black child in this country has been taught and told and led to believe that the Civil War was over slavery, which couldn't be further from the truth. One tedious glance or deep exploration into the Civil War would say otherwise. And there have been those who, even during that age, had began to understand the industrialist North versus the slave-owning South, and that there's this term, cash cow. The cash cow in the South was the slave, and of course the industrialization put them in jeopardy. Put them in jeopardy so much so that the attempts or to secede from the so-called newly formed United States, which had achieved its separation of powers from the so-called British Crown. And so it was industry, agriculture, and commerce that in conflict with each other. This was the conflict between the North and the South. Even Abraham Lincoln himself, even some of the so-called black talking heads who are given carte blanche in the media, you know, the various major mainstream medias, when given the mic to speak on this, have failed on purpose, for a purpose, to even bring up the real reason that this war was fought. Slavery, in the sense, was secondary. It had not the proposed imagery that our children, that the average black child has been taught in the United Snakes public food system, as one of the brothers is known to say, you know. But this was a beef between two groups of white men who dominated the North and the South, and Abraham Lincoln was in a predicament, and he himself said that if he can keep the Union together and keep Africans as slaves at the same time, then he would. And there's a point of demarcation or line drawn in the sand between the citizen and the denizen, And Abraham Lincoln had referred to the slaves as denizens instead of citizens. And but there's this constant reinvention of Abraham Lincoln to keep Abraham Lincoln at the forefront that he had become the hero of the African slaves. And we know that that is bullshit. And bullshit, you know, is what it is. Real shit to get you killed. Bullshit to get you killed even quicker, as was belted out in one of the songs by the politically charged revolutionary group Dead Prez, duo Dead Prez. Just wanted to add that into the equation. And so we go from Reconstruction and, of course, the force of violence that was reinstituted against the so-called newly freed Africans. And this newly formed force of violence, which went unchecked on the part of the state, became known as the Ku Klux Klan. And so this was the new sheriff in town, if we may. And if we take a look at the history of violence, the so-called white man, his various apparatuses from the time that Africans were snatched from the continent with the force of violence, or the violence of force, and the concept remains the same, but the uniform changes. And so this is why we also became conscious enough to understand that the Klan was an extension of the state during those times. And, of course, a lot of Southern politicians, police authorities, whatever, what have you, businessmen, were Klan members, you see. And so that in itself became also the wing of violence to continue to keep slavery alive in this country. Moving on into Jim Crow. You know, now in the midst of that, we've had leadership that had come in our midst because it was only fitting that the law of nature would raise someone from our midst to guide us, to lead us, and the capitalists being the shrewd thinkers that they were, figured at some point, you know, in time that this would arrive. And so they naturally could get ahead of it and create that leadership, you know, make that leadership come into view. And so this is how, you know, we were given, you know, the leadership, you know, to control the masses of us who you know, were displaced. You know, now, we must add along the way there have been some advances, some successes in the midst of the struggle during those periods, in that period. There are some of us who are very conscious what is referred to as Black Wall Street in Tulsa, Oklahoma. As a matter of fact, there was this avenue of connection. I can't quite remember the name of the two streets. Just to add right, real quickly, one of the streets started with a G and another street started with a P. And so it's like saying, you know, G and P streets at the corner where they met. And so the G, the A, and the P became known as the Gap Band. You know, a rhythm and blues R&B group referred to as the Gap Band. That is how they got their name, the Gap Band, from those two streets. But you know, that was one of the successes you know, there's a thing where, you know, we're still here. I've heard some brothers and sisters say, you know, we don't die, we multiply, like baby kids, what have you, you know, like the gremlins, you know. And, of course, we understand what happened to the Black Wall Street. And due to the inclinations of the whites who, you know, in that area, in that era, were hell-bent on keeping Black people in their so-called place. And so we've had moments of prosperity. If you look at Marcus Garvey, the Garvey is a movement that rose up in the early 20th century from a Black man who rose out of the Caribbean. And Garvey began to understand the same way that the white ruling class understood about commerce and trade and prosperity. He even extended his thought process to the continent of Africa, the Back to Africa movement, the repatriation of the displaced masses of Black people here in this country, you know, which some might try to parallel to the so-called abolitionist movement. You know, these white abolitionists who so-called fought for the abolition of slavery. We prefer that these whites would have been the John Brown types. They'll see this same type of liberalism today, you know, as we speak, you know. And so we're very clear on this position, you know, the so-called good whites, you know. Yes, there were some whites who made a contribution to the Underground Railroad. And we thank the ancestors for those Africans who were able to be freed from those plantations, led by the great Harriet Tubman. And the great Harriet Tubman had once said that she could have freed so many more Africans only if they would have knew that they were slaves. You see. So Garvey comes onto the scene in the midst of the early 20th century, attempting to revitalize a much despised group within this country. And so this path, this road, had only been 70 years in the making, on the road to liberation from Juneteenth, 1865, known into the 20s and the 30s and the 40s. And so Garvey's establishment of the Universal Negro Improvement Association, which met with some backlash even from the so-called Black community or the so-called Black intellectuals, these various characters with these multiple ideological frameworks, which were supposed to be in the best interest of Black people, that we understand it was in the best interest of a certain that existed in the midst of the Black population. One, William Edward Burghardt Du Bois, W.E.B. Du Bois, so-called the founder of the NAACP, or the instrumental force that brought about the NAACP. Several other characters during that time, A. Philip Randolph, who threatened a march on Washington, the first march, and received some concessions on the part of the corporate America. William Trotter, who's one of the lesser known so-called Black radicals who had come in to conflict with Garvey. There's a whole host of things these entanglements. The black African brother, the black brother, African brother, Bloodhood, you know, by Cyril Briggs, come into conflict with Garvey. And, of course, there was Booker T. Washington, who come into conflict with W.E.B. Du Bois. In the meantime, the white ruling class corporate structure of America had seized the time to exploit these contradictions. And out of all of them, it appears that Garvey had been the most impactful or had the strongest impact in the midst of the black masses. And, of course, the Nation of Islam from Elijah Poole, who became known as Elijah Muhammad, who founded the Nation of Islam. And out of that arose a Nation of Gods and Earth, Clarence 13X, who split off from the Nation of Islam. And so these contradictions, these antagonistic, ideological beasts, if you will, had prevented us from unifying collectively, which has been detrimental to this day, as we still see similar veins of it. And so this is part of the liberation struggle. And of course, history clearly bears us out in all liberation movements. You see, something I also want to add when I spoke about, you know, this Juneteenth being signed into national holiday by Biden. Yes, it was a concession. And of course, you know, this was a return of favor, of course, securing the black vote by the black talking heads. This letter that was signed by so-called 100 black leaders that was presented to Biden, and in his letter, there are so-called demands. Now, here you have 100 so-called black leaders who made their demands, and the question is, did those demands benefit the black collective masses of us? Let us not forget that there are 40 million of us here in this country. And, of course, those demands had something to do with choosing a black vice president to run for office, which led to Kamala Harris, who can wear several hats. One minute she can declare to be a woman of color. Next minute she can declare to be biracial. And, of course, the next minute she can declare to be a black woman. The first black woman president, the first woman of color president, the first biracial female president, you see. And this is clear. This is clear. And, of course, with that control the narrative of what Juneteenth really should be about and how, you know, to correctly assess what Juneteenth is supposed to be beyond all the romanticism. You know, of course, any group of human beings would celebrate the type of treatment that was meted out to them by being attached to a chain with a iron ball on it in case you decide to develop some type of psychological dysfunctionalism referred to as drapetomania, and out of your mind trying to run away and trying to escape, and something was wrong with you that you needed psychiatric treatment because of some psychosis that you developed to be free. So these are the type of tactics, the type of psychological operations that have been practiced on the slave. Okay, I'm gonna stop right, Conrad. Do we have any callers by any chance?
Black power, no, Chairman, as you will.
Okay, cool, right on. Okay, so so from there, you know, this abstract notion of freedom, you know, there's a price to this freedom that we must understand. You know, as opposed to those who, like I said, you know, try to control the narrative of what freedom is. You know, if we take a look at history, if we take a look at the other oppressed people from around the world, of course, we see the similar conditions that they were placed in, and that it was therefore their right to seek their own liberation. And what it boiled down to was those who was going to lead it. We look all over the world, and it become realized that their liberation must be won in the TV struggle. And in a war, there's always casualties. And so this is what they began to understand as a genuine liberation struggle. You know, the lead up to it is certain phenomena, such as police brutality, you know, repression on the part of the state when a particular group arises due to the material conditions. And this group gets to be ostracized because of his ideology. And the one group that comes to mind, of course, is the Black Panther Party. And the Black Panther Party developing the 10-point platform. It's a program, community control, pending the overthrow of the state or the dismantling of the state, as it is written in their own Declaration of Independence. At the time of George Washington was declaring that the King of England was a tyrant. You know, those who were the property class, you know, those whose interest was to be left on this side of the Atlantic to run the show how they saw fit. You know, and so they declared their independence, and they predicated that independence on the British Crown's position as this newly formed country being the colony of theirs, a colony of the British Crown. And so that led them to hide, the Crown. Ways using such terminology as the word, you know, abuses, you know, when the, you know, abuses have become so in verbatim, so despicable, could no longer be sustained. And when an authority, you know, verges on despotism and rails against humanism or the rights of people to exist in a safe environment, then they felt it was their right, natural right by the laws of nature to dismantle their system. You know, to demolish that system, to destroy it, whatever you want to, you know, refer to it as, and replace it with the a much more humane one. Based on the principles of democracy. Supposedly this word democracy derived out of the Greek term demos, because the Greeks so-called established the first democracy. And we, you know, anybody who understands any better, of course, and unfortunately that most of us don't, but we know that this is bullshit, you know, even so much so that the word demos is an African term that it derived out of Africa, that the Greeks were perfect copyists. They were perfect plagiarists. That the word demos is actually the name of God, one of the names, one of the attributes of the God we know that had made and shaped and formed man in his own image. And his name is pretty much the same as the word demos. The Greeks had this habit of pronouncing words or spelling words or ending words, our terminology, names, and expressions. As a guy we know by always placing an S on the end, And so in the language, the T and the D is the same. So this is also where the word atom comes from, the so-called smallest particle of life of which everything is made animate and inanimate. And, of course, in the Hebrew Bible, it's no coincidence that we're told that the first human being that God fashioned in his own image, his name is Adam. Again, you can't tell if I'm saying Adam with a T or Adam with a D. So all of that derives out of Africa, out of because that's one of the names of God that we know as the maker, shaper, fashioner of the first man, of the first human being. Of course, we should know the original man, the black man, who is now finding himself in the condition that he is in today. And so I bring that up for a reason, because George Washington and the gang, they were nothing but hypocrites. They were absolute hypocrites. And of course, anybody who knows me on a much more closer level, I don't indulge in absolutes, you know. But we know that George Washington, they were being absolutely hypocritical in that sense. We understand that, you see. And so we say the same thing for the African, that the African has the right to declare himself, to come out from underneath the yoke of George Washington's descendants, and declare our freedom from through liberation out from underneath this empire. You know, that British Empire then, and this is empire today. So we believe and understand and know for a fact that our liberation is predicated on the treatment that we have been getting since 1865, June 19th, in a much more sophisticated way. The several ways of the continuous war against African people, which equates no more, no less than slavery, which a lot of us, don't readily perceive at first glance. And of course, I pointed out the prison system, the prison industrial complex. Even today, you have modern day abolitionists, a lot of young African brothers and sisters who are declaring themselves abolitionists. And with the George Floyd phenomenon, calling for the abolition of the prison system, the abolition of the police. And it should be understood if the New Age abolitionists call for the abolition of the prison industrial complex, the abolition of the police, then what does that curtail? You know, what does that involve? And of course, we know that is a recipe for cataclysm. It's the same as saying abolishing the Federal Reserve System, which is its own private corporate entity separate from the American corporate entity. And this is why when we look at, the interest rates, people trying to purchase property and houses and the credit card debts, college debt, and all these different things. And that's what drives the system. And the purpose of the Federal Reserve is to keep people in perpetual debt. So whenever they get the call in their loans, they can bring out their so-called civil police, such as the IRS, and collect. And, these neat-sounding terminologies like garnishing your paycheck, you know, those types of things, you know. That is no more nor less than legalized extortion through various means referred to as debt. And so the struggle from that perspective on the road to liberation, of course, is many facets to it. And we want to, bring these things out. And be clear on it. So again, the purpose is to politically educate our people, you know, to move our people away from this usual orthodox thinking about, you know, the word freedom, you know, which is, of course, in itself has become commercialized. Juneteenth, the confiscation of a grassroots Juneteenth from the bottom up. There are many genuine brothers and sisters who organized Juneteenth and attempt to do the same things that the People's Political Party is attempting to do. And the hijacking of Juneteenth because they see the potential, because they see the potential in it. So if you take a look at the commercialization of Juneteenth, what do you see? You see corporate entities and companies, Fortune 500 companies and corporations, and their CEOs and their boardroom strategizers coming up with all types of venture capitalist marketing capitalist strategies to profit from the black masses of the population of the country. And so you take a look at Walmart in recent weeks, Walmart's attempt to create a brand of ice cream or what have you, you know, putting on the racks in the stores, you know, Juneteenth apparel. Now, one thing comes to mind, of course, and we're clever enough, we're conscious enough to recognize that the possibility, even here, Walmart, a generous attempt to allow a black startup or artist or t-shirt, you know, producer, manufacturer to have his product in a major store, you see. But the bigger picture is to confiscate it, is to control the narrative of what Juneteenth should be in their eyes, as opposed to what Juneteenth would be, let's say, in the eyes of the black militants, the black revolutionary groups, who are much despised as it is we speak. You see? And so there's a constant attack, you know, on anything that has potential within the black population. You see? And I'm gonna get to something else in a minute. And so we talk about freedom. Let me say this here first. I'm gonna go into this here. High slavery, you know, still alive in the fame. Of course, you know, I pointed out, of course, one where the infusion, the mass kidnapping of black people, in placed in these concentration camps, alias prisons or jails across the country, such a lucrative business. I was at a meeting some years ago, and this is a couple of years after Hurricane America, that popularly known as Hurricane Katrina, and we was at this college law school, law clinic, and it must have been maybe a dozen of us in the room sitting around this long, long oval table, and pretty much the conversation revolved around this thing of reintroducing ex-cons or what we know as former POW, former prisoners of war, back into society, reacclimating them, you know, to societal life. And so these reentry programs, and it was certain things that were being said up in there, and I know, you know, I added my 2 cents. And there was one Caucasian, one European in the room, as my comrade would say, Pilgrim in the room. And he had said he was so compelled because of things that were being said in the room. And he said he was compelled to tell us about this conversation that he had with a buddy of his who worked at the court, you know, the auction block, you know, and it called them up and asked them how things are going over there and so on and so forth. And it is, according to him, he said his buddy that it was a fucking disaster, you know. So he's thinking that, you know, this federal money, FEMA is not coming in and nothing being refurbished, rebuilt or whatever, you know, something like that to get the ball rolling. And he said, no, that's not it. He said, because the prison is not filled up. You see, that's what he meant when he said it's a fucking disaster, because the prison ain't filled up. You see, and so this is how they actually think. This is what they really believe, and because they have to, because it's a profitable business, and at the same time, it's a control mechanism, control factor, to control the most threatening of the population of black people, and particularly young black male, because in any war, in any society, you know, where the oppressed group is seeking this liberation, then, you know, by natural formation, you know, the young people, you know, they carry out, you know, the actual war liberation, and of course, you know, there's the, you know, the minds, the brainiacs, or, you know, the geniuses behind, you know, the liberation struggle, but it's rather ironic, you know, that he would make that comment, because that's actually what it is, you know, and he was only being honest. You see what I'm saying? And so, you know, the prison industrial complex being a wing, of course, of the state, you know, to keep, you know, the system to keep perpetuating itself. Now, on another front, of course, you know, economic slavery, you know, and that's one of the pet peeves of a lot of people in the you know, and I hate, you know, using, you know, this expression over the conscious community, you know, but you know, that's one of the major things of discussion in one panel after the next, and one black gathering meeting of the minds, you know, one after the next, you know. And so the question is, what seems to be the problem, you know? Yeah, of course, in any system, any government, economics, of course, plays a very important role, very crucial, just for the simple fact of keeping, you know, that system afloat, you know. But when you look at the economic situation of the so-called black masses or the black population or black community, what do you see? Economic disenfranchisement. And see, all of these things, you know, they just don't happen just because somehow, some kind of way, black people don't know how to run a business, you know. And so you have to understand, you know, the whims of capitalism, the whims of a number of factors. For instance, you know, this thing called gentrification, you know. The other two things I want to point out, when you talk about the beginning of the road liberation, June 1865, you know, Reconstruction, Jim Crow, on into the 70s, of course, you know, the 80s, what they refer to as the war on drugs. When the war on drugs, of course, is no more than a war on black and brown people on a much larger scale, black people in particular, in the so-called hood, the ghetto. Even when Nixon coined the, you know, the phrase war on drugs, at the same time he was coining the phrase war on drugs, his own drug, so was in the business of flooding the community, you know, with heroin, due to the complication that was going on in the late 60s, you know, no more nor less than a chemical war against black people. And he said years later that they had become old and gray, that, yes, that the influx of heroin into the so-called Negro community, into the so-called ghettos, was a strategy to prevent the black rise of a movement in so many ways that could topple the system, and that it was used to keep black people in static. Now, this is out of his own mouth. You know, John Ehrlichman, you know, so I don't have to, you know, be making up shit. Anybody who wants to take a look at that, feel free. You know, so there's this period in the 70s and the 80s. And, of course, there's operations carried out by the CIA, Operation Chaos, that was also unleashed on the movement, the larger society, because of the static, the upheavals that were taking place as a result of the opposition toward the Vietnam War, you know. And a lot of prominent black individuals got caught up into Operation Chaos, Sammy Davis Jr., the political murder of Jimi Hendrix, who had become influenced by the Black Panther Party, who was in Europe touring, and in between his songs, you know, he would do these interludes and give political ramblings on the Black Panther Party. So he was internationalized the Black Panther Party in Europe. And then in the 80s, of course, the crack epidemic hit. And, of course, we know that that wasn't by coincidence. All the cocaine that was coming in, the several South American individuals who were made to be scapegoats when the shit hit the fan, with George Bush, Ronald Reagan, Manuel Noriega, the leader of Panama, who in one instance was a great leader, who became the CIA's scapegoat and became a dictator who had to be taken down because he was allowing cocaine to pass through the Panama Canal. See? So this is part of the road to liberation from 1865. And this is very relevant. And this is why we titled the show, you know, Juneteenth, in the beginning of the road to liberation. The hits that we're obviously going to have to endure collectively as a people. And so we just point them out. The other one, which has just as much grave consequences, you know, in our struggle, what the state, the pharmaceutical companies, and particularly WHO, the World Health Organization, the National Institute of Health, referred to as the war on cancer, the war on AIDS, and what have you. We understand that war is no more nor less than the war on black and brown people, and particularly black women, who have suffered so-called disproportionately in their own struggle, which some have embraced the ideology of feminism, the feminist movement, and even within that, there's been some contradictions on the part of white feminists who, in so many ways, seek to exploit the personal lives or the and I say that because, you know, what I mean is, you know, black female persons, you know, black female bodies, this thing that has been carved out from everything else, you know, and so seeking to exploit the struggles of black women to advance themselves within the white male patriarchal system of things. You know, in other words, you know, you use somebody until you get what you're going, and then you discard them. And so there have been a number of suffers who have been clever enough to have addressed it, or pointed out, or even other so-called women of color from the Latino community and what's left of the, you know, what we know as the Indian population, you know, the Native American population here. And that's part of the struggle. And so for anybody who thinks that when 1865, June 19 hit, that we were somehow free, have been terribly misguided due to the leadership and those who control the narrative on purpose for a purpose. And so that's why it's very necessary
for us as a People's Political Party to be part of taking back the narrative, you know, getting the narrative out of the hands of those who have pretty much betrayed us, those who have compromised us as a collective group for their own self-aggrandizement, their own cliquish purposes. And you know, historically, you know, we've had that problem, you know, and so this is what we believe, you know, is the problem into gaining our actual liberation from the vile clutches of the white ruling class, and of course the pyramidal structure of the so-called middle class whites, you know, and then, you know, this middle class percentage of the black population and so forth, the labor class, the working labor class, exploited workers, and of course on down to those who are out on the street who are hustling, you know, doing the paper chase, trying to get it, you know, how do you know? And this, of course, unfortunately, is the huge bulk of our population here. And of course, then you start talking about the youth, who a lot of people from, you know, my generation have turned their backs on, have refused to, you know, take care of their business so their parents were able to benefit from those who got the shit beat out of them, you know, ran, chased out of the country, murdered, political murder, assassination, thrown in prison on trumped up charges. You know, we identify as political prisoners today. And of course, due to the antagonistic relationship between the state and the still displaced masses of African people in this country, that relationship has remained irreconcilable since day one, when African people were brought here violently to the Americas, beginning in the Caribbean, you know, around 1501. And of course, we're not really taught from that point of origin. We're usually taught from the period of 1619, Plymouth Rock, you know. And like Malcolm X said, that we didn't land on Plymouth Rock. Plymouth Rock landed on us. And the establishment of the United States Corporation, that was based on earlier models such as the British East India Company. And of course, before that, the Dutch East India Company. And of course, these various white groups in their imperialist ventures beyond Europe, the expansionist period, had begun to branch out around the world and create nothing but chaos for black and brown people. And of course, specifically here, the so-called slave trade. Now, when we talk about liberation, speak of the ideology of through which channel that we try to, let's say, achieve this. And of course, I mentioned Garvey earlier. You know, we talk about black nationalism. It was a natural response for people to turn inward towards itself when all means of have been exhausted in trying to appeal to the moral character of the dominant group. And so it was natural for black people to develop that type of attitude. And we also see that which occurred even among the white population that referred to itself as Jewish.
you know, this white population, the first set of Jews developed the concept of Jewish nationalism. For what? You know, why? What was it predicated on? You know, persecution of Jewish people. You know, now there's this so-called legacy of 4,000 years of Jews being persecuted. And of course, you know, those of us who know better, we understand that if there was a population of ancient Hebrew people 4,000 years ago, we know that the anthropological, archaeological record would show us that the present population that refers to the Jews is not the biological blood descendants of this ancient group. But however, it is the going thought process that's what the point we're trying to make here is that through the persecution of the Jewish people, they naturally developed the concept, the ideology of Jewish nationalism, so much so that it was embraced, you know, the world over. No, nobody complained. Nobody said shit. Nobody accused them of being reverse racism or none of that, you know. And, of course, with the Arab community, the infiltration of the Europeans and imperialists, in particular, you know, the British in the earlier days, you know, late 19th, early 20th century, you know, infiltrating, you know, what they made up as the Middle East for natural resources, and particularly oil. And, of course, later, you know, the American Empire, so was referred to as Anglo-American establishment. And so what did that cause? It was a natural response that the Arab population would develop and come together and form some type of nationalism to protect their interests. And what we mean by their interests is cultural interests. You know, them as an Arabic-speaking population, whether, you know, there's some black Arabic-speaking people. There's a mixed Arabic-speaking people, you know, and there's pale-skinned Arabic-speaking people. But the whole concept, the whole understanding was the Arab international community coming together and realizing what the Europeans were up to after a certain point. You know, so they naturally developed Arab nationalism for self-preservation, self-determination. And so we see the same thing is no different. It's just in a different geographical location right here in America. And so this is the most practical endeavor that we could ever have besides the being socially engineered into integration. So the other groups are practicing a form of nationalism while they have instilled within us integration, which naturally will leave us at a disadvantage, you see. And that's very important. So with saying that, we believe that Garvey had it right, and we believe that the other leaders had flaws in their in their political game. Now, these flaws, of course, you know, were induced by unseen forces, the moneyed interests, you know, the powerful oligarchs that for some reason is never applied to the rich white ruling families here. Some of them will be more famous than others, you know, Rockefellers. Who Jay-Z and I believe it was Dame Dash or whoever, you know, came up with the concept of Rockefeller music or Rockefeller records. You know, no coincidence, you know, no coincidence at all. But, you know, the Rockefellers have been one of the most famous so-called rich white families in this country. And they've had their hand in everything. They had their hand in King. They had their hand in a whole lot of other people. Had their hand in so many black leaders that most of us don't even realize and understand. And Jackie Robinson was the one who exposed that, you know, in his autobiography. So this is what Juneteenth should mean to the average black person, not those who are presented as the talking heads of it, and therefore to control the narrative. You see, and this is what it should mean to us. So we say again that June 19, 1865 was the beginning of our struggle for liberation, and that today, you know, we've gone through pretty much hell, and that at some point, you know, our liberation has to take on a persona that transcends the usual response or ideology that
Black Power, gentlemen,
affects us. Yeah, we got Conrad.
We got a call. Just
okay, can we squeeze him in? We got 5 minutes left. Can we squeeze him in?
Yeah. Hold on.
All right, caller, give us your name, where you coming from, and your question or comment.
Okay, yeah, this is Brother Harold. I'm calling from New Orleans, Louisiana. I would have been on here more earlier, but I just left one conference call. I was with the Black Panther alumni here in the city of New Orleans, you know. So my thing is, now what was your topic?
Well, the topic was just basically, you know, Juneteenth, the beginning of the road to liberation, as opposed to, you know, this, you know, the national orthodox, you know, somebody's been controlling the narrative, you know, saying, but we taking it. No, I just want to say, you know, the topic was Juneteenth, the beginning of the road to liberation. You know what I'm saying? But go ahead.
Okay, I'm saying it's Juneteenth. I mean, it's okay, but I'm like this. I'm you know, let's, you know, don't just give us Juneteenth. What about our reparations? You know that our forefathers and our foremothers have worked and stuff all this time, and they haven't received it.
Exactly.
And we need to receive that. And I'm going to say this. You know, I'm not against our brothers and sisters from the Caribbean getting reparations, but they need to go to England and get their reparations. Those from the Caribbean and places like that. But here in America, that's us. We need to get that. You know,
they just give us a holiday,
and they still, I mean, they don't want to, when it comes to reparation, we just going to give you a holiday.
Yeah, there you go. That's what we were saying. You're hitting it right on the head, bro. But that's what we were saying. And you know, I pointed out how it's those who control the narrative, and, of course, the corporations and, the Fortune 500 clubs, it's a must. They have to do that. I mean, it's got to take the taking back of the narrative, and that's why we say, as revolutionaries, you know, we're no longer tolerating that bullshit. That we're very clear on who the enemy is, and that, like Huey and them developed, you know, the thing even with the so-called blacks, that they develop an enemy of the people campaign, whether the motherfucker was black, brown, red, yellow, or white. You see what I'm saying? So
yes,
it's very clear. But, yeah, you know, reparations is going to always be the issue. But, you know that we're going to have a topic on reparation. And, you know, it's not going to be, you know, I'm not trying to, like we all of a sudden are cornered the market on topics or anything like that. You know, just that we trying to keep alive with people like Nat Turner, Marcus Garvey, Queen of More, Malcolm X, Sada Shakur, you know, Fred, and we're trying to keep that shit alive because there's an ongoing struggle against those who, even in our midst, who have their own selfish interest. But, of course, you know, the people are much more strong. But, look, man, we got to go, man. You know what I'm saying? We have a little, man, I hear in the background, we got to get it in, man. You know, keep your head to the sky. Look, man, tune in next week, man, 7 p.m. Central Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, in defense of the people radio. Your host, National Chairman Nat Turner Coles, Brother Motherland, M.O.D., and our engineer, Sister Amina Oshun. You heard me straight up. on the wheels, on the ones, tools, like you said, or engineer. Black Power. Good night, y'all.